Hello everyone, Nexa here, and today I am joined with both Gray Tome and Artemagnus, i.e. Ray, and we'd like to welcome you to another podcast. Today's podcast, say hello guys.
Hello guys. Hi everyone.
Hey, how's everyone doing?
So in today's podcast, we're going to be discussing how to handle player conflicts as far as being a DM, as even being a player disagreeing with the DM or player disagreeing with each other's. So what we're going to do is we're going to probably give a couple of examples and then just have a good discussion. And this topic was brought to you by Gray Tome, so I'm going to let him kick it off with his first question.
Okay, so I appreciate that, Nexa, and thanks for listening, everybody. So found myself recently, Nexa and I are in a unique situation because Nexa is actually playing in a game that I'm running, and then I'm playing in a game that he's running. So there's going to obviously be some disagreements on interpretations of the rules. His game happens to be a Pathfinder game. Mine's a 5e game. So different rule sets, different interpretations, and just found myself talking a lot about this with friends and how to constructively handle these types of disputes, both as the player and as the game master or dungeon master. So kind of flip-flopping the scenarios there between Nexa and I. But in particular situation, the first one that kind of came up was a problem we ran into in a Pathfinder game that Nexa is running, where we are absolutely lost in a dungeon. None of us really took the time to actually draw out a map of where we were going, mark the floor, mark the walls, do anything. And we know for a fact that we've actually run in a complete circle because we actually triggered a trap that we intentionally avoided the first time through, so we know we're lost. So the discussion came by, it's like, okay, we're going to stop right here and we're going to sketch out a map of where we all think we are, where we have been, to try and get an idea of where we are, what locations we've been to, what the shape of this dungeon looks like, and try and figure out how do we get out of here. Because in that particular game, we're up against some time limits. We don't have forever to figure out a way out. And, you know, we're now down to the wire. We have to get out of here or bad things are going to happen. So I basically said, okay, so everybody in the party, who's got what skills? What can we use to do this? And one of the players said, I have dungeoneering. Perfect. They go ahead and roll 20. Make a roll. Roll a natural 20 on that check. So I'm like, okay, this is a great. We're off to a terrific start.
And let me interrupt you right there. Keep in mind to people listening that I never told them to roll for this. They took it upon themselves to roll. Continue.
Yeah, that's why I was pointing at this as roll 20, where the player that had the skill just went ahead and rolled it on roll 20. They clicked on the skill, it automatically did the roll and thought, okay, great. Well, there's the roll. At which point in time, Nexa, who's the dungeon master in this game, says, okay, wait a minute. Dungeoneering doesn't really apply to mapping out a dungeon. I was like, well, that's ridiculous. It's dungeoneering. It's the skill of dungeons and things like that. And being in a subterranean environment, you know, you're going to know about dungeons. Nexa pauses for a second, looks at the skill and says, well, you know, talks mostly about identifying monsters and things along those lines. And it's a knowledge skill. It's more of an academic study of dungeons, their construction, design, and the creatures that typically would live in them. I'm like, well, no, that doesn't really hold water. And when an application can be monster identification or construction details, but you know, it's the study of what to do in dungeons. But I pull out my core rule book as the party's kind of arguing back and forth, saying that, you know, we're trying to use the skill to map out our environment, to get and Nexa made it clear that he was not going to reveal parts of the dungeon in roll 20, but we didn't want that. We just wanted some sort of an idea of a map sketched out, like, okay, this is the kind of the shape and direction and things and rooms we'd been in, just something to give us an idea of what the lay of the land was. So the party's discussing back and forth. I pull the book out, look up the knowledge skill, and sure enough, there's nothing in there about finding your direction in a dungeon or mapping it out. No application that in any way. So as a player, kind of look at it and say, okay, the DM's kind of made a call, and everyone in the background still arguing this point about what they can and can't do. And at one point I did jump in there myself and said, well, you know, we've been playing this game once every other month. You know, me, the player, we've been down here for months now. But the characters that are in the dungeon have only been down here maybe 2 days. So they should be fair. The details should be fairly fresh in their minds where things are. So I'm like, doesn't that make sense that we'd be able to sketch this out? But I'm like, you know, more I look into this and kind of going online, and then, and when I get online, now I'm getting to third party sources, people's interpretations of the roles. When I kind of realize, okay, this is really, the wheels are coming off the train here. And I'm like, the DM's made a decision. So like I said, you know what, we disagreed, but you know, it's holding up the game at this point. And this group's fairly large. We have 6-7 players, depending on who's there, and everyone's kind of talking back and forth, trying to figure out a way to make this happen, and it's obviously bogging things down. So I basically throw my hands and say, you know what, call's been made, that's it, dungeoneering won't work, you know, it's that's not going to help us here, what will? So Nexa, the DM, says, okay, anybody have geography? I'll allow a check for that to figure out where you've been, to kind of get a feel for slopes of the land, the ground, and you can use that to kind of figure out where you've been, and you could be able to, that'll help you out in sketching out a rough idea of what the dungeon looks like. Well, of course, the whole chat goes silent at that point when we all realize none of us bothered to put any skill ranks into geography. So,
and let me interrupt you again. One of the first things I told the party, that the group of players, was that skills were going to be very important. I was going to make it my mission to use every single skill that's in that book.
And I want to go on record as saying that I was very clear to Nexa that there is no skill that is more important than Arcana, because it's basically everything. Magic is tied to everything. It's like the Force. It binds us all together. If you have the Arcana skill, you should by default have all skills. But that's a discussion for another time. So there we are, stuck in the dungeon. And, you know, but as a player, kind of to bring this full circle as to what the point was and why I was kind of thought this topic would be interested, as the player, at first I was really involved in this decision, saying that no, we should be able to do this. Doesn't make any sense that we can't sit down and figure out, you know, where we've been, at least to some idea, draw a rough map of where we're at. But the more I looked at it, the skills we were trying to apply to it, and the way we were going about doing this, wasn't going to work. It wasn't, it didn't make practical sense. You know, we should have early on said, you know what, we're going to make a map of where we are, or we're going to make a record of how far we've moved, or mark the walls in some way so we know what directions we've been traveling in. We didn't do any of those things. We have all been playing collectively. There was probably, I don't even know how many decades of gaming experience was in the group at that time. But none of us thought to do this. And it's just, okay, you know what? We didn't do it. We didn't have the forethought to do that. We didn't, you know, it's hindsight's always 20/20. And now trying to go back and undo that, I realize as the player, it's okay, you know what? It's our bad. We're not going to be able to get around this. And unfortunately, from here on out, we have to figure out, okay, this is where we are right now. From here, somebody's got to map this thing out. Someone's got to sketch this out so that we can figure out where we are.
Now, from the DM perspective, first of all, I don't think anyone's still mapping it out. I don't think anyone has grabbed that mantle. And one of the things was that when we were having the discussion, I could tell that it was getting kind of heated, because a lot of people were saying that they're able to go somewhere and not get lost. And the fact that they were wandering around in this dungeon didn't make any sense.
Okay.
And so it really did get a little heated. And one of the things I said was, who has never gotten lost? As the DM, I must say that after that whole incident, because I said, let's just move on. It's not going to work. You guys don't have the skill. I thought, like, well, you know, I always, you know, second guess, like, could I have been wrong? Maybe, I'm not sure. So, little disclaimer, I play Pokemon Go. And so in our building, I work in a large campus building. We can actually get to a Pokestop without leaving the building. So I went to this different part of the campus and I tried to get a Pokestop. And then once I got it, I came back, but I got lost. Now, this is my building. I've been in it many times, but I literally got lost trying to figure out which way do I get out to get back to my area of the building. So I said, nope. I said, it makes perfect sense. Perfect, perfect, perfect sense. So I didn't think I was too hard.
Okay. Do you want me to, okay. So, okay. So I have several questions because I think a lot of this falls on the GM. At least, okay. at least this example. First of all, this is a Pathfinder game, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so this is completely different from 5e because in 5e, there's rules to handle that specifically. Players basically wouldn't get lost. But okay, but in Pathfinder, there are specific feats that keep you from getting lost. There's actually rules on getting lost. As for Tony's situation with skills, okay, so look, D&D and Pathfinder are not survival games. They also are not like a maze, right? Like mazes, in my opinion, and I have been vocal about this in the past, just simply don't work in D&D. It's unrealistic. It's dumb. It doesn't work. It could work like magic-wise and stuff, but I think in general for just trying to get players lost in the forest, it really doesn't work because magic exists that can counter anything the GM is trying to do 9 times out of 10. Now, if skills were going to be an important part of the game and it was going to be discussed, this is going to be kind of like a survival mode. Someone had to chronicle the map. You know why that's usually not done? Because it's assumed the character is doing that. A player shouldn't be mapping his own area. Couldn't he just say, my character is chronicling the map? That's it. And if he has the appropriate skills, which would be very basic skills, because it could fall into different areas, the GM really should say, okay, it's not the player's job to map out where the players are going. That's old school thinking. That's second edition crap, not Pathfinder or 5e D&D. Now, if you're going to do it like that, where the player's going to be responsible for a lot of those little things, then that should have been discussed way prior to the session or the campaign even starting. If the GM failed to do that, then this is why you're getting in a bickering now.
Well, I did say early off at the beginning that skills were going to be important. And second, I disagree with you slightly in that the mapping. The thing is that they wanted me to reveal the entire dungeon so they can know where they've been. I don't see how, unless you're actually mapping it, how you would get a copy of where you've been.
Well, again, it's assumed that the players are not peasants. These are, it depends also what level they are, what their professions are. If you have someone who's, say, a scribe, he's probably in his profession, in his background, which Pathfinder uses traits to do this. And you have discussed the background with the GM, then it should be assumed that someone's doing that. Now, again, it's different if this is the theme of your game. Like it's like a maze, I could understand it. Because the walls are shifting and things like that, and you want the players to track it, then that should have been mentioned. But if you're talking about a dungeon that they've already been in, right, and that they're already there, and it's just casual walking through, oh, this is the area, this is the area, can they get lost? You're causing a lot of unnecessary things because, well, there has to be modifiers. Like you said, you've been in a campus where you've gotten lost. We've all gotten lost on the way home. we take a different exit or something. I get that. That might be because of stress, panic, but how do you calculate that into a roll? Should there be advantage if you're playing 5e? Should there be modifiers because he's a dwarf? Should there be modifiers if he's a dungeoneer? What if he's from that land, right? Like, there's all these unknown variables that the GM just has to kind of either say yes or no. In the end, no arguing technically should take place. There might be a small debate to try to convert and change the mind of the GM, right, really quickly. I say maybe 5 minutes, but when you destroy the mood or things start getting heated, that's not good. The GM says, he must be aggressive in my opinion, make the rule, say this is what it is, let's continue playing, right? And then after the session, talk about it as to not destroy the mood and tempo of the game.
I agree with that. I say once again, I don't think anyone has the required or requisite skills or have the background that I could say, yeah, I can give you that. No one did that. And like I said, I stressed at the beginning of the campaign that skills were going to be important, that I would be cycling through all of the skills. Because normally, and this is probably my flavor of the game, is that, you know, I feel like sometimes we just pick skills just that's going to help us in combat, or skills that we think will just be really useful, and then we ignore all the other ones. You should be rewarded if you take, like, different types of knowledge or, you know, different types of...
Okay. See, and again, yes, you're right, Ed, but okay, look, again, this is up to the GM to really clear up prior to the campaign.
That was done.
If you said skills are going to be important, okay, skills are going to be important. Well, why are they going to be important? Right? Well, this is my theme. I really want to focus on survival. I want to focus on arcana checks, getting details. I'm going to make maybe my own little homebrew system where I'm going to modify it slightly because I want the evidences to be study and to be calculating and to do these things, right? If that's what you're doing, then the player should have been told that and been like, look, this is a thing that's going to happen in the game consistently.
Well Gray Tom, were you told that?
We were told the skills were going to be important. And part of the theme of this thing is that there's a magical effect that's basically counting down. So natural light and magical light are diminishing. And in this particular game, I'm playing a sorcerer, and through an arcana check, was able to figure out that based on how well the magical light is working, I've kind of extrapolated out how much time we have. And I think there was a miscommunication in that, at least from my interpretation during the discussion, that it wasn't so much that I wanted the map revealed, because I understand that that can cause certain problems and may provide even just at the basis, just a technological challenge when you're working with a virtual tabletop with dynamic lighting, things like that, where you've got to reveal zones and things like that. But I was looking for some sort of a map showing the outline of where we were and what rooms we had gone, kind of having the character sit down and say, okay, hey, let's sketch out where we think we came through this room. And then, okay, we went into this other room because I know we battled Gelatinous Cube and things like that. And we're having some challenges because we can't see whole rooms because there aren't any other light sources there, just what we have with us. And those are slowly getting diminished. They're diminishing in the amount of light that they're able to generate. If some of the players were like, well, yeah, we want to see the dungeon so that we can do it. Now,
but keep in mind, you the way you guys were putting it toward me was that you were saying, I want to know where I have not been as opposed to where I have been. And my response was, well, you know where you've been. You can tell where you've been. But if you've never been into the dungeon, how can you tell that this, you know, this section of the map is somewhere you haven't been? You get what I'm saying? If you're being dropped somewhere off in a campus, and you have no idea where rooms are, how will you be able to know there's a room, you know, 30 feet away? You get what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, I do, and that's why I kind of let the point go, because it's like, okay, you don't have this, and you know, because I was really looking for a map of where we'd been, like an outline of what rooms we'd been in, and I understood that it was something that we were kind of doing as a forethought several sessions into it, which in this particular one, it was okay if you're not keeping track, it's you're going to get lost. And that was part of the theme that was built into this, with the light diminishing and trying to find our way out of it. So stopping and saying, okay, how big were some of the rooms? Because I was just trying to get like an outline of where we'd been, what kind of shape this had, so we can kind of figure out, okay, where are we right now in relation to where we've been, so we kind of know an idea. Because my character, or as a player, I kind of had an idea that my character had this idea that we kind of had to go to the east on the map, that it seemed like we'd gone west from my gut feeling of it. So I'm like, we need to go, I think, east. We need to find what's going on there. And as we found some encounters, it's like, okay, these are some new things that we haven't come across. So I kind of think we're on the right track to getting out. But although it's the here next to say it, I really was under the impression somebody was keeping track of that path we were taking. But because that particular one, it did kind of get to a point where someone's like, well, that's fine, let's quit going about it and let's just go in a direction. It's like, okay, what direction do we want to go in? No one had an answer for that. That's where I realized this was a no longer productive conversation with it, and the GM had made a call, and you guys are not gonna be able to get a map put together. You don't have the right skills to figure out, to come to a consensus of what the areas you've explored look like to know. So I'm like, okay, you know what? We didn't put enough planning into it. And it was kind of thing where we kind of found ourselves in here. We didn't enter this dungeon knowingly. We just sort of popped up. So we woke up in this dungeon. So we really don't know where we are. We have no real knowledge of if we're even on the same plane for all we know. We really have no clue. And I think that was part of the feeling that this, like, confusion that you don't know where you are, you're starting from scratch. And you know, I just think I should have kept some track of, or like I said, told the DM that, okay, we're making a record of what the map looks like, and so it's like, hey, are we going in a circle, where are we at? So so the DM could then say yes, because I think, Ray, to your point, it's something that would have been good of us to say up front, to say, hey, you know what, one of us is keeping track of this, and that way we don't get lost in here. We didn't do that. I think if we had, it might have changed the conversation, where it would say, okay, you know what, you realize you've been down here, there's a exit to the north and the west that you realize, but you know, you haven't tried the door to the west or the east, whatever it may be. But we didn't really say that. We just sort of started off and we're adventuring, and now we're kind of in a bad situation.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, I mean, it just needs to be discussed prior, you know, and then once the game gets going, you know, you don't want to stop the whole game, all skills and you know, and also it's also, and again, this falls to the GM in my opinion. In the end, the GM verifies all characters. It's, you know, it's not like you made your characters and then the GM said, okay, let's play the game. Because if that's what happened, then that's wrong. The GM should always model the adventure based off of the characters. If you tell the character skills are important, and then the GM looked at him and said, hey, didn't I tell you that I'm going to focus on survival? None of you picked anything. I really suggest that we do this because this is what I'm trying to do. I'm not happy with it. Change it. You don't like
Well,
it? Don't play my game, right?
no, I
But
understand what you're saying, but I'm saying all skills were, I said at one point in time, all skills would be important. So I wanted them to be thinking about skills, but I didn't tell them specifically. Keep in mind, my game isn't necessarily like survival like that. Like
no, I.
I'm really hard, but for example, there was a fair that they had where it was a festival of light. And before the fair, there was pre-set up where if people had dungeoneering or engineering, they could actually build things for the fair so that it could be on display. So, you know, those were types of skills that, you know, most people don't take it, but I actually had one player that took engineering. And so he actually kind of made basically trenches.
Ah, I see what you're saying.
So it's I want you know, whatever skill you pick, I don't want at some point in time, every skill in that book I'm going to use to some extent, because I want it to be like, you know, in this situation, you shine because you took this skill. Instead of everybody taking, you know, knowledge arcana.
Yeah, I hear you.
Stealth and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I hear you. But again, that should have, I'm not saying you have to force the players, but it really should have been an emphasis. And then let's say the players didn't do that, right? Let's say you tell them and they're like, no, this is what I want to make. And everyone's bent on doing their thing because everyone wants to be a lone wolf. Nobody wants to be a team player, or only one team player, or the majority want to do it because everyone wants their character to be special. No one wants to just be a supporter, right? Those are very few and far in between players that you have who genuinely accept any class just to play in a good game, right? If that's what it is and you still didn't get to it, you're basically forcing players into this situation. If nobody has investigating, okay, think of it like this. If you had a bunch of fighters and paladins, you wouldn't have them infiltrating a thieves' guild. Right? They're not going to sneak in, pick locks and steal and pickpocket. Right? You're just setting them up for failure. Same thing in anything else. If you're going to put them in a situation where, like, well, no, I understand teaching lessons. Okay, we're going to learn them. You're going to let them adjust, especially in Pathfinder, where you can retrain every level. There's rules for that, where you can do things. They can re-emphasize their characters, change things. And I get it. No one's going to have every skill. That's an unrealistic, I think, view to a game, unless you have an outstanding group of players. But you should try to fit the adventure. If it's to the point where, like, wait a minute, we're in this dungeon and we don't even know where we were at before. I mean, they're adventurers. They're seasoned adventurers, depending what level they are. They are intelligent. I mean, they're not peasants. People forget this. A first level, Pathfinder is very specific on that as well. I just want to mention. There's expert classes, adepts classes, NPC classes, and then PC player characters. Player characters are supposed to be the top 10% of the world's population, right? And so, like, you have to look at it like that. I mean, again, I understand emphasis of survival. I keep saying a survival game, and I know that's not what you have, Ed, but if you're going to focus a lot into that, that should have been discussed well prior to the game. And then, like,
look, and all I'm saying is, it was. It literally was.
And then you're still being stubborn and putting them into this situation to teach players a lesson, which I don't.
No.
You know.
No.
And I do understand monsters, magic. I also understand it during combat. Oh, your character, you know, has to roll combat, especially when there are skills, traits like photographic memory and Pathfinder. There are classes who have abilities to help not get lost. So yeah, there are rules for that, but there has to be a base rule. You shouldn't just be outright, oh, well, you guys are lost. You didn't write down maps. So can I not even roll to see where we're at? Can I not get a basic idea of where I'm at? I should at least know where north is, west is, or something, unless magic isn't concluded. You know what I mean? So it's just, it depends what mood you're in and what mood the GM is in and how things went, in my opinion.
Okay, so I'm going to put a pin in this discussion. Continuing on the same theme, you know, would you want to give us one of your conflicts that you found interesting?
Yeah, man, I have conflict with players all the time, Ed. You know what I mean? Like, I'm an elitist when it comes to playing. I don't like newbies. I don't like noobs, you know, like players that are new to systems. My days of teaching people how to play games are over. I expect seasoned, well-conditioned players to know my aesthetic and to know what I want. And so, am I constantly getting in player conflicts? I have players leave my groups a lot, actually. I mean, I'll have a consistent core group, but I'll have one player who disagrees with me for some things that I just won't budge in, or I just don't have a certain view. Let's see, what's an example of this? My Game of Thrones game. I was running a Game of Thrones game and I decided to allow a player to be a house lord. This means that he is the lord of the house. He can basically kill players off if he wants to. He can send them to the black, chop off limbs, rape them. He can do whatever he wants to the players and can do anything he wants within his land, as long as he's not breaking, like, the general rule of Westeros, right? And all the players had created this house and worked together, and it was really cool team. and the guy who was playing the household literally starts making these really weird decisions in the game. And I'm like, and like the players all kind of had a consensus of what the goal was. This is what I'm going to do. This is how it's going to go. This is the arc. There's a lot of personal out of, you know, over the table or under the table interaction with the narrator, me, the GM, where like, oh, this is the arc. This is what we're trying to do, you know, and I'm trying to feed them that. Well, then the player starts making the head of the household starts making these decisions. After the session, I spoke with them and I'm like, hey, man, what are you doing? And he goes, hey, look, man, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm bored. And I was like, what? He goes, I wanted to make the game more interesting. So I just thought, you know what? I'm going to do whatever I want because I'm the head of the household and I'm going to make the game more fun for everyone. And I want to see if our house can survive us screwing people over. Let them come and we'll deal with it. I mean, this is what the player tells me, like, not even like playing. He was like serious and like, he's like, it's just a game. Let's have fun. I lost my freaking mind, Ed. Tony, I lost my mind. I said, are you kidding?
But imagine you've got a story that you're trying to tell.
I go, we all talked about the direction of the campaign. The players are all trying to do these personal goals. And you just felt that you were bored as a player and you wanted to make things a little exciting for yourself, which would then make everyone else have to fall under your arc. I go, that's narcissistic one, first of all. And it's kind of rude. He's like, well, it's just a game, man. We're just playing it. Wouldn't it be fun to see if we could survive a slaughter from other houses? No, that's not the kind of game that I spent weeks planning and history that you've basically destroyed in one session. I kicked them out of the group. I was like, you know what? I go, dude, go stick to D&D because you cannot handle the power of Game of Thrones. And I kicked them out. And then the other players were like, well, where is he? I'm like, I kicked them out. Explain to them, they're like, hey, man, you didn't have to do that. I'm like, no, I don't want him playing. Like, it was very easily publicly discussed that this is what we were all doing, and he just wants to do whatever he wants because he's bored. I don't think so.
Well, it sounded like it was behavior that doesn't really fit into Game of Thrones in that world. You know, you're not going to just go rogue and do whatever you want because you will get knocked in place.
I've had some GMs tell me, oh well, what, you couldn't deal with the player? Why not go along with it? You couldn't control the flow of things. You could have punished him. There's ways to rein in players. I don't want to rein in players. That is not my job, to rein in players. Like, and I know some GMs feel that way. I get it. Sometimes you can bring in a player, punish a player. Oh, I want to split up no matter what. I'm going to climb the tower because I have boots of flying and I'm going to go to the top of the tower. Okay, now you're going to fight the boss by yourself at the top of the tower while everyone's taking the stairs. Yeah, yep. And you try to convince him, you try to tell him no, but there's always that one player who wants to just do his thing. He goes to the top. What do you do? Well, I'm going to kill you then. Simple as that. Right? Lesson learned. And then he expects to make a character, right, at the same level with the same magical items and the same experience. That's a big Negatron. No. I punish players by making them one less lower than everyone else when they die. There has to be an incentive and a consequence to your death. And that's what I do. So long as they stay in the same tier, which is in D&D 5th edition, 1st through 4th, 5 through, I think, 9th, and then 10 through like 15 and 15 through 20. So that's what I do, me personally. So yeah.
Well, we had a situation kind of like that, Ray, where we had a player. It was a Marvel superhero game. I was a player in it, and our GM in that one had been running this game. This was a 7-year long Marvel campaign. It had been going on for years. All the other players in it. Now, I was relatively new. I was in the game for about a year at this point in time. So I still we were playing once every other week or so. And we were flip-flopping my D&D game and then his Marvel game. So, you know, there was a lot of history there. And we had brought another player in shortly after I came on board. And we're talking a group now that had 6 people in it. So, he had opted to play A kind of a non-traditional superhero in this. He was a artificial intelligence, and so we were kind of a version of the Avengers in the Midwest. And he was going to be the computer that was installed at the main base, and he could talk to us. He had teleportation ability to move us around. He could talk to us. Well, he kind of realizes that the character's not really working really well, because he's not able to really engage in field missions when we're out kind of mixing up with bad guys. He's the computer back home, kind of stuck. He can transport us there, do searches, look up details and things like that for us as we need intelligence, and kind of like an Oracle type character where we're able to get intel fed into us. But he wanted to, you know, meanwhile, we're all using our powers and fighting bad guys and doing all this stuff. So, you know, examples would be he ran the phone system, and, you know, important people would call, and then he would kind of just kind of goof off on these interactions with the GM, saying that, oh, well, what's the password? Well, there wasn't a password. And he'd be hanging up on important people that were calling in, and then we'd say, no, you can't do that. And the GM would say, hey guys, you're not there. And, you know, he'd try, the GM would try to work with him on this character concept that he had, and it became evident that he's kind of getting bored and kind of left out, and was doing just that. He was doing goofy things to make it kind of interesting on those interactions that he was able to be involved in. So they were kind of working on like a remote sentient presence for him. So basically a robot that he could show up in. So he would accompany us to missions. Well, in one case, we're like, okay, here's the plan. We're going to sneak in, and, you know, when everyone says go, then we're going to attack. So we go with the plan. Well, then he decides, I'm just going to walk up to the front door where all the guards are and just knock on the door and tell them, hey, I'm here. And we're like, what? You can't do that. And again, the GM's like, well, you're not there. He's alone. Are you sure you want to do that? Is that really what you're doing? And he's like, yep, I'm doing that. Well, then the whole plan kind of falls apart, and everything gets kind of screwy because of that. And I could tell our GM, the players were getting frustrated with it. He was a remote player. He would Skype in, and he wasn't at the table with the rest of us. And we're all kind of like, okay, this is kind of, it's starting to impede our game, and we're kind of getting a little irritated with the way he was playing. But a long-term friend of ours, we'd known him for a long time, but he was kind of feeling left out and wasn't there with us. So finally one night, when the issue of teleportation comes up, there was a dispute over what it could and couldn't do, the range and how it would work, how many people could go, and then he was arguing with the game master on it. And then he's like, okay, you know what, we'll table that. So then to get him more involved in it, he included some cyber combat. So we're fighting guys in the real world, and then he said they're trying to hack into the computer to damage him. Well, then the player doesn't like the way that the game master was doing cyber combat with this artificial intelligence. He didn't like the way he was doing it, because he kind of wrote his own rules to handle it. Then, you know, it's going back and forth with him. The rest of us are all sitting there kind of waiting, all of our turns. The other, you know, five of us are at the tables kind of waiting for this to kind of resolve itself. I'm a player, and I actually, as a player, just jumped in and said, you know what, the GM's made a ruling, it's enough, we got to move on. One of the other players said, well, you know, great to him, we got to give it a little bit of time, he's got to work out. And I'm like, no, we all five of us have been sitting here for 20 some odd minutes now. Meanwhile, this player's been arguing it. We've had other issues in the past, and hey, you know, you're a good friend, and, you know, I'd love it if you could be here physically to play. And I get you're not really getting into the action as much as we are, but, you know, this is the character concept you went with, and the GM's trying to work you in. We got to shut it down, have a date. Now, at that point, the GM's like, yeah, you know what, we got to stop. He actually stops the game, leaves the room, calls the player himself, they talk it out, which is another 20-30 minutes, comes back in, and then kind of smooth things out. But that was pretty cool. One where a player was, now he didn't kick him out, he just had to pull him off the side and have a one-on-one and say, listen, you're disrupting the game, and your behavior is not working well with the rest of the group, and I need you to kind of get in line, and, you know, we'll work out some things to get you more involved. And, you know, and he's a player in my D&D game, and, you know, he's working out really well in that group, again, being remote, but he's kind of working with the group, and, you know, it's going well, and I'm working him into stories. But in that particular situation, he was really kind of pushing the GM's buttons. Yeah. And I guess because the GM's there in the room with us, and then he's remote, that they don't get that kind of empathy, because he's on a screen on an iPad on the table, and you know, we're all here, you know, so obviously something was getting lost in the translation on that one, but you know, we were able to work it out. But it was a case similar to that where a player was kind of doing his own things, because I think he was trying to get himself involved in the game, and instead of waiting around, because he was a computer and had to sit around and wait, he wanted to do some things to kind of boost his role in things, as opposed to, you know, just passing stuff along. But it can be tough sometimes, and that was one where I don't know exactly what was said. I was a player in that, and it just was, I knew the group was getting kind of frustrated with it.
Yeah, I hear you, man. It happens. I mean, what are you going to do, right? I mean,
craziness. And that's the thing. And he's a good friend. Like I said, he's in my game, and he's a player in my game, and he doesn't run that way. He runs very responsibly, and it's just, it's like he's of all things playing a drunken master that came out in the Xanthar's Guide, and so it's hilarious. He's created this whole background, and I've actually incorporated it, and it's such a rich story that he kind of created for himself. I've worked it into the underlying story of the campaign, where he's just realized that, hey, some, he's a half drow, and you know, it's just, that's kind of playing into some things I'm doing in the game now. And you know, he's a great friend, and I know a good player, but in that particular situation, it just was, I think, like I said, the guy, he was bored and then just tried to increase his role, and how do you handle that? And you know, thankfully it was resolved amicably. So
well, one of the things that I like to do, whenever I feel like something is dragging on, I have a picture of Elmo that I flash across the screen.
We got Elmo.
And the translation for Elmo is enough, let's move on. So I told my players up front, if you see the Elmo, that means stop and let's get back to the game.
Okay, just for listeners, know the perfect example of where next I had to Elmo the players. He frequently, when he wants to discuss private information, and this is something I've actually done on my games, using, because we're doing this on TeamSpeak, so we're using different channels for private conversations. I've started to incorporate that a little bit, but he'll pull in certain things. When you make perception checks and investigation checks, he tells you the information in private. You then have to relay that information to the players, which I kind of like. Some things could get lost in the translation, how I'm explaining things to them, sometimes I don't want everyone to hear what I tell a player. So he pulls one of the players off into the GM channel. He's having a private conversation with us, and so there's the rest of us there. And somehow we got on the topic of what was easier to run, 5th edition or Pathfinder. So one of the other players says, well, I hear from a lot of people that 5e is harder to run because of the lack of rules. Because we were all saying that Pathfinder is a more challenging game to run. The modifiers make it more difficult. And I'm like, you know, I haven't run Pathfinder, but I have run Starfinder, and yeah, I think 5e is easier. It's a little more refined than Pathfinder. There's not as many modifiers, and you know, so we're going back and forth. Well, he says, no, I've heard 5e is harder. So a bunch of us are like, no, that's crazy. And so the discussion's kind of going back and forth. We're talking. So Nexa comes back into the channel and hears this, and we're like, but we're in the middle of this conversation. He's like, okay, well, let's get moving. And we're still going on about what's harder, 5e or Pathfinder, when all of a sudden in all of our Roll 20 screens, Elmo pops up. So we got Elmo'd. And you know, when you see Elmo, you got to stop. It's time to move on. So
that's hilarious.
So it's just, yeah. So, and then we joke that, you know, if we start doing something like, I don't want to get Elmo'd. So it's just, so kudos, Nexa. That's a good one.
That's funny.
Yep. Well, I definitely think we hit a wide range of how to handle player conflicts, from kicking a player out to talking to them on the side to having a little discussion with it. So, final thoughts?
I think in closing, I'd the advice I would give both people as players, from my own personal experience as the DM, as the player, it will sometimes get a little tense. You're going to feel strongly about it. I've been there. I've been playing these games for a long time. Nex and I have been friends for decades. We've been gaming the whole time we've been friends. And sometimes, yeah, you can get emotionally invested in this. It's like, no, I think this is fair. You try and remember, it's a game, and that it's not worth a friendship. It's not worth a serious argument. It's just we're all going to have different styles. Nexus style is different than mine. Ray's style is different than mine. You know, the types of games that we run, the way we run them, it's different. And I have to remember that that's this, the way I do things isn't necessarily the way other people are going to do them. And I have to kind of dial back a little bit. You know, I another game I was in, I had a disagreement with the DM about awarding experience. He was going to award it at the end of this module that he was running. I felt it should be at the end of the session because I did it. I literally went to the book looking for a rule that says when you award experience. Couldn't really find anything hard and fast that said you have to award experience at the end of the session. It's really up to the DM, and it's just it's try to dial that emotion back and remember you're here. It's a game. You're here to have fun. Try to pull that emotion back, both as the DM and the player. Try to separate that, let it ride, and you know what? You can always discuss it later on after the game.
Yeah, I hear you.
All right, Magnus, do you have any final thoughts?
No, I think Tony. I mean, I think Tony nailed it on the, nailed it on the head. He definitely. Yeah, I mean, players are players, right? I mean, first of all, your average player is a little socially awkward. They want to fit in, you know, player rage. GMs are you know, egotistical and can be narcissistic and elitist. And you know, so like you have these group of people, especially with Roll20, where the value of a friend, right, like it is different. Like I think with us, the way we play our game, right, like the game that I'm running, where we've been playing since we were in freaking high school, that's different. You're my friends. We kind of see eye to eye. We don't try to piss people off, but that's with you guys. That's a rarity. We have something rare. The average player, a Roll20 player that I can kick out and replace literally in one day, right? It's like a mass production of players. I don't have to deal with that. And I think that even causes further GM and player conflict, and it's just not something that you should, perpetrate. That's it's going to keep doing it, especially if you get into the topic of pay to play, where players are now paying GMs to run games that they want, which that causes a whole new dynamic, which I find very interesting, but I guess that's for another session. So no, I don't have anything else other than that. That's it. That's all I got.
Well, that's a good point Ray brings up, because I don't run a lot with strangers. I mean, the last time I had, now recently in my Curse of Straw game, it did add a new player, someone I didn't know personally, but he was a friend of a friend. So again, everybody else I'm playing with, it's, yeah, we've all known each other most of our lives. So that does make a little different as opposed to it being strangers, where it's really I don't play with that kind of dynamic where it's people that I don't know where they're coming from. And so that could, but I think still that just dial back that emotion and just try and find groups that you like. I mean, it's, you know, we all have similar game styles. I enjoy running in Nexus games. I enjoy running your games, Ray, you know, and I'm starting to get, especially Nexus has been running a little more recently. I've been in your game, Ray, a little longer, so I got kind of a feel of how you want to do things. And with your game, I got to be careful not to, like, you know, smart off or do crazy things, because it's like, hey, if you get snarky, it's in your character, but that can backfire on you, you know, and that can, you know, so I got to be a little careful with that. You know, and in Ed's games, it's like, hey, and it's like, you got to state, this is what we're planning to do. If you don't really say that, then it's like, hey, you can't assume, oh, we went back. It's going to be more like clearly identifying some key things we're doing. Like, hey, are we keeping track of where we're going, or just running off into the dungeon? And unfortunately, you know, our characters, we were kind of playing to our characters. They were all like second level, I think, next time when they got in there. So it's just, I chuck it up to us being noob players, and, you know, our actual players should have known a lot better, but...
And I will just add for my final thoughts is that I think I agree with what both of you all said, but I also think that in the end, it's really a bunch of, well, a lot of communication. You just have to communicate. And if you have an open dialogue with your players, or with the players, then I think you can overcome any obstacle. And if you can't, then, as in Art of Magnus' case, sometimes you may have to just kick a player out. So I think that just try to keep the game running, because the whole point of it is that it's for fun. It's relaxing, enjoying. And so if it starts to get bogged down with some type of discussion like that, then make a decision. If you're the GM, make a decision, right or wrong, stick with it, and then come back and revisit it after the game is over with. And that is my two cents.
You're right, man.
Well, I'd like to thank everyone for listening to this podcast. I hope you found it useful. This was very interesting, and thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Yep, everyone, take care.